I need to look at the collector, the certain thing.
The government.
At that time, my son was in the
New
He lived in New Jersey, my son is in the we found out later, I'll find out for now, so I'll put in officially clearer for you. He took over 400 volumes of the most precious Svarim, over 400. He sold a significant sum of them. I'll give you a dogma. There was, the man is no longer allowed to mention his name, there was a man by the name of Florschein who lived in Switzerland. And he had a weakness for Haggadah. And one of them that he took was a kid that Barry took from the Rabbi Zavi, a Haggadah called the Kitzi Haggadah. It was an illuminated Haggadah written in hand. And all the beauty were in colors. We reprinted it a few years ago. Perfectly forgotten with the cover. Father did it. And this sefer he sold to a book dealer, if I recall, for $69,000. That book dealer sold that one book to this Florschein for about $155,000. That gives you an idea of the type of books that were missing and what he was doing every single day. People were flying in, picking up the bottom, giving a hate of them, and going back with the suitcase full of bottom. And
you know how many he sold? How many? Okay.
When I spoke to the attorney in Manhattan, he said to me, look, the first thing you better do is get a restraining order, a restraining order, to prevent him from selling another book. And everything that he might still have in his house will have to be impounded. I said, that's great. That's great, do it. The next day he drew up some papers, and he went to the federal court in the Eastern District where the trial took place eventually in Cadman Plaza, downtown Brooklyn. And he came before Judge Glazer, he's still there. Judge Glazer, he had goes by his initials, I forget his initials. Leo Glazer, there's another initial. And there was a hearing before Glazer, and he happened to mention, among other things, that he himself was a book lover, and you can understand the Agnes Nefesh, and he gave immediate equal. Gave the restraining order immediately. Ex parte, without the other party. And he ordered marshals, federal marshals, to go to his house in Montclair, because it was a federal, federal case, because it was taken over New York State as interstate. Not interstate, but interstate. They went to his house, the marshals went to his house, and they picked up every case they could. There were 400 volumes left. And they impounded it in New Jersey in a bonded warehouse, put a seal on it, and at least the fire, to an extent, was put out. Of course, how do we get back all this one that was sold?
How many?
We eventually got it all back.
Every single thing?
Every single thing. Was back.
And the Rebbe saw all this problem? Before Gimel Talmud?
I mean, sorry.
Before Gimel Talmud?
Everything came back.
But how many problems sold back?
There are probably another 78 in Swarm, probably.
When did the last ever come back?
I'll get to that. Are you with me, everybody? That afternoon, I went into the Rebbe, and I told him what happened, and I could see a sigh of relief, considerable relief. At least something has been done. The Rebbe said the first thing I should call up the Rebbe. The Rebbe said whose home the Shammah wasn't this as much as the Rebbe. And I did that after I left the Rebbe's room. But the Rebbe gave me some pointers what we have to do. There's going to be a trial. Very, very legal steps that we didn't do, that had to be taken, that we took eventually, and that we should be very careful, etc., etc., etc. Shortly after that,
what about pagan Christian mystery? Let me get it.
Truth is about it, but before I went to Lewin, you saw my deposition?
No, I spoke once about Abin, but during the pages of
okay. Lewin, I brought Lewin that page of Shukumar, Cheshire Mishkur.
The first time you met
him? Yeah,
yeah,
but I...
You came from the
Rebbe? No, the Rebbe didn't know about it. No, I brought it myself on my own. From other Rebbe. But, you derailed it.
The Rebbe gave you certain rules.
Yeah, that we have to do. Yeah, that was something. Okay. In any case, by then, a few days after that, the board of Agudat Chassidus of Babylon reconstituted. The Rebbe told me at that time we should also take in Jerome Shestak, the lawyer from Philadelphia, of Hashem who was Makadah to the Babish, be part of the case. Not with the lead attorney, but he was an associate attorney. The Rebbe admired him for something that he did for Lubavitch many years before that we spoke about on one more than one occasion. The newspaper that the paper the libel, and they retracted, and the Rebbe told him the Rebbe felt that he could be very helpful. Later on, he became president of the American Bar Association. He was a very well-connected lawyer and a very good lawyer for his firm. What? And they worked together perfectly the whole mahala of the case. We got together. Before I went to Lewin, I spoke with Rabbi Fakowski, so Yitzhak Fakowski, the Rosh Hashiva at that time. He was what the Rebbe used to refer to him as a Chassidish, and he wasn't a Lubavitch, he was a Pelosha. But the Rebbe, when the Rebbe would say, is a friend of Chassidish Rav, I think he's Rabbi Fakowski. He told us he was a Chomet to Rabbi Fakowski. I asked him if there's any Shaila, if he's in here, going to Akoy Shalach. And he told me, under the circumstances, and he quoted the same Cheshire Mishpat, that the Shabbat Shalei was no problem. Midas is Sinitzkikum, because eventually, when I had to give a deposition, before you can skip, we'll get to that in the chronological. I was asked, Al Tmach Ma, we gave the people of Abba Shabbat before. So the answer was and papers were drawn, and filed in the court. The case was assigned to a Goyish judge by the name of Charles P. Sifton, and we wanted it to remain with Leo Glazer, the one who gave the restraining order, but we couldn't do that. Restraining orders are done on a whim. It doesn't go through the regular court gero of assigning cases to judges and judges to cases. So that was the Shemak Glazer, but when it came for the long haul for the Essen case, there's a certain say that they have in the Bati Mishpat. You can't pick your judge, obviously. So they came up to be Charles B. Sifton. We tried to change it, but it came to Chmish Beholfen, and it remained with this Judge Sifton. The possibility of remotely with a judge. There's many, many interesting tidbits that when you write a book, you can write about it. But he had trouble from a son later and he needed some help from us. The case was filed, and of course, the other side took lawyers and they filed a response to our complaint. And we met with the judge shortly thereafter in the chamber. And the judge said, you're religious people, why can't you settle this whole thing in a rabbinic tribunal? And why do you have to go through this whole procedure? It's going to drag on and on. It's going to be very costly. It's going to be public, on public record. People are going to see every single move, every single thing that's said. And we told them that we went through that already. And Barry, Tzad Hasheni, said that since we started the court, we'll finish it in court. No, it was fine. Everybody's fine with that. And after a few meetings in court, the judge actually set a date for the trial to begin. I think it was Pulkit of Kippur, December 2 on that year. And in the meantime, between, let's say, September and December, 3 months, he allowed what they call in legal terms a discovery, where each side can look, can produce documents, and Fahel takes depositions. Depositions mean you sit somebody down and you ask them questions about what is pertinent to the case. And it can take a few days, it can take a few hours, depending on who the person is, how important that person is to the case, how pertinent it is, and so on. And it's done with supervision from both, with lawyers from both sides. And then looking for documents. Those 3 months, there was no day, there was no night. The night ran into the day ran into the night. Except for Shabbat, of course, but there was no Saturday night. There was no time for any kind of a break. Now I'm going to get into the Nachalatev, Rabbi Levin, who had the documents in the library. At that time, he was in charge of the library, and he had many archival files. Was very helpful, and he together with Yitzhak Wilhelm, you know who it is, they all work in the library still, and they were very, very helpful in producing all kinds of documents. I won't go into things that they found from Chaim Lieben to Rashid Le'er, that the case was put together. But on the way to the trial, before the trial, there were some very critical moments. There was a time that they wanted to make a deposition of the Rebbe. Sit the Rebbe. You don't have to go to court, you can do it in your, it's the courtesy, you can do it in your home or in your office. They wanted to depose the Rebbe, ask Shilas. A deposition is a very ugly thing. It's not polite, they're not polite, the attorneys, they shoot questions at you very demeaningly and without any respect at all. And who knows where they could go? The Rebbe should be subjected to that, but what can you do? The judge, unless the judge says no, and why should he say no? As long as the person's alive, it should be we have no brain. At the last minute, Rashag, the shwager, was Uthmanch. He wouldn't be able to live through a deposition. He was a pachten b'chalal, and he couldn't handle it. I remember him coming to one of the lawyer's office, some of his helpers, his office in Shiva, and he was shaking hand and foot. So he told him, look, we have an aid for you. If you don't bother the Rebbe, we don't bother you. He said, you got a deal. And even Barry was Muslim at the time. So the Rebbe, that problem was removed. But it still was a bitter, bitter 3 months when they came into the library, they took videotapes, the thing of the Mach, after the Yom Kippur, it was a very demeaning and uncomfortable thing. Now the question is, what do they do with the Rebbe? The Rebbe is Docha Abbas Bas Melech. She's it's the Rebbe's library. If it's private, she's a Yiddish, they're just like her sister. And she's an aunt of the one who took the front. She can't be go without, you can't have the trouble of her being deposed, that's if I had. So at first we thought, we'll try to stop it, make some kind of a deal, stop it. And I mentioned it to the Rebbe, says, no, should I go finish? If she can be deposed, so with the Meir Hogan, she'll come through with flying colors with the Haloshim. And the day came, the Rebbe was Maskin, and the day came that she had to be deposed, was what not to get Mother Kinsai in the Stuk, in 1304 President Street. A certain time was designated. The day finally came, and she of course she was in the house already, and she was very, very shocked when Hannah, her sister, and Barry showed up. She never thought that they were there coming to her house for such a nuptial, such a confrontational thing. But they were there, and they sat right after her. She didn't look at them. Three lawyers came. And she asked me to be there. I should sit right next to her. She sat over here, and I sat next to her. And the lawyers came in. Our lawyers were there. Shestek was there, and Lewin was there, and from outside, and Hellerstein, and Kogan, I think there was a third one there too. And Barry, and kind of was sitting right opposite her in the dining room. And they started asking questions. There was a videotape made of it, because if you have to use it in court, There was no court reporter there to transcribe it like they do in courtroom. So they had a videotape, and it went on for a little over an hour and a half. And they tried to trip her up, and she was an elderly lady in the 80s. She was in the late 80s. And they could have been baffled and confused. You ask a question in the beginning, a complicated question, and three quarters of an hour later you come back with the same question after you forgot what you said. And you've been bewildered with all kinds of other questions and answers in the middle. It's a trick. If you're not telling the truth, you can't keep testing of the lie. So you have to be telling the truth. And she was just as cool as can be. She sat and she answered everything straight on. Sometimes she would skip it with a stalkite or a schnitz from the guts. She was just superb. And then it came towards the end. I'll never forget this sight. The lawyers, asked her, "Tell us, Mr. Schneerson, to whom did these books belong? Did they belong to your father?" And she said, cool, without it getting upset, the way the boys were upset. But she said, "My father had nothing. He owned nothing. They belonged. I'm sure it was Chabad. To the system." And then that was, they threw the pencils on the desk. They saw that they got nowhere with her, and that her testimony can be used very much on our side, outside of the Rebbe. And then they put up the videotape, and then she turns to me and says, "Tell us the truth. And it was over."
When did she say the famous line that my father and his books won't
listen? That's what I'm quoting. I'm paraphrasing, actually.
And he said he had nothing. Whatever he had, both he and that belonged to him.
As soon as it was over, a few minutes, the lawyers left. I went to 770 to tell the Rebbe that it was over. I told him what happened. I told you she'll come to us by flying colors. The imun that the Rebbe had in the Rebbe, that she would not be able to be flustered at the end of a good skin, that she would be strong. An extraordinary part of Malka, majestic demeanor in every way, even in her older age. But she was really a very, very delicate, a very delicate person. And because maybe, as I mentioned, she can't take it. She won't be able to take this horrible, horrible thing. And it was horrible. Then there was the famous happening with the lawyers after the Rebbe was freed from the deposition. I came to the 770, they met in the library with the Rebbe. I was there, Rabbi Shmuel was there. It was the day before the Rebbe Chasana. Yudalan was Yudim with him as they came. And they spoke about what happened. They spent about an hour and three quarters with the Rebbe. And then they went home, took the Rebbe home that night. I remember Yudalan Kisra was the next day. The Rebbe went to the Yale. And I usually went with the Rebbe to the Yale, but I couldn't go because that was the day they had to depose me. I had to have my deposition. Just a couple of hours in the afternoon.
How'd you do?
And then after that, I came back to the Rebbe. The Rebbe was just coming back to the Yale, I remember, when I came back to the 70. Every night I went into the Rebbe to report what was going on. And I told the Rebbe, "I'm sorry I couldn't go with him to the Yale." He says, "The whole state of Kolet, the Mitzvah, put him in the Mitzvah. Of the Chaim, was the Tcha, I didn't even look before him. Any time it's put much to Tcha. The Tcha, I didn't look before him." That took care of that. And that was just a few days before Yitzchak Kislev. The trial began 9 o'clock in the morning, Yitzchak Kislev. He went for 3 weeks, 3 weeks gone from Thursday, Friday afternoon. The judge wasn't even there on Friday. He left to Paris on the holiday. But Thursday was really the end of the case. So this was 3 weeks later, and now we have to wait for the decision. There was no discussion about it. I'm just telling you that's how it works. Meanwhile, it is the Rebbe went to the Yale every single day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, of every week, of every day of the 3 weeks of the trial, went to the Rebbe Klein. What? I don't think so. I can check.
There's no court. There's no trial or something.
There. I'm not sure. As I said, I can check, but I don't think he does something.
Every day when the trial was over, everyone
details. Yes, I went in every single night and I reported what happened, what transpired, as you know, with me usually.
You sat in the courtroom this whole thing.
Every day. That's why I didn't go to the Yale.
Over here are tougher than your deposition.
Good. Tell me the
for the same sign, the same.
I'm very confident. So we had to wait for the decision. The lawyer said before 3 months he won't get a decision, even though it's just one judge that he wants. Maybe 4 months. Anyway, 3 months went by, 4 months went by, 6 months went by, and 12 months went by. And Mehet Kim Pipsnish. And that's the song, Simchakas Katarat Asweikas. You know what it is? To sit in the window for 12 months, not knowing, made the Derek Meruzim, the Vetish was with dying. You know, we're really fast to go anyway. The judge was very impartial. He didn't give. Sometimes he gave us them in this way, sometimes he gave us them in that way. By the way, there were a lot of tidbits in the course of the trial that were very interesting, but we don't have enough time to get into that. Some are very comical, some are very tragic.
Why wasn't there a jury?
Good question. Both sides did not want a jury, and there was a swear that there would be, but there was a legal reason why they wanted. And it's better that there wasn't. It was they spit the gun to the case when I thought it was. Anyway, the first win we got of the decision of Hay Davis, it was about 11:45. I get a call from a lawyer by the name of Minzer. He was a lawyer in Washington in Nathan Lewin's office. He says he hears that there's a stock of decision ready in the chamber of the judge system, and that it's affirmative. We won the case. So I left word in the office to tell the other what it is, that the case is over and we won it. And I went with the other we shot down to the courthouse and picked up a copy. On the way back to 770, I got a chance to get the gist of what it was very, very strong in our favor. By the time we got to the Rebbe, it was after 1 o'clock, I think. 1:15, 1:30. I went into the Rebbe and I gave him. And told me what had been done with victory, out and winning. And the Rebbe was almost—he couldn't notice anything in his face. There was no schmeichel. There was no hardly any gesture of affirmation, of joy, glee. But it seemed to me that there was a relaxing, some tension, some subsiding to an extent. It looked at me. I mentioned something to the Rebbe about a Fabrengen, and the Rebbe said, Medabdachach Miyashin. In other words, he didn't feel that it was all over with this. Again, the Rebbe was right. No, that was years later. I can't say this. He told me I should follow the Rebbe.
Just like the first time,
when the good news came in, he wanted to hear me the first time. She shouldn't be.
When did he?
Probably on the outgoing. my daughter.
When did Rebbe tell you what's your children?
Huh?
When did Rebbe ask you what's your children?
He said
12
months. I think that was in the different slot of the whole thing. It was not in those 3 weeks of Tiskev Kislev. That was before. No. He means, I know what he means. It was something else. Not the same issue. I'm talking about the holding of the Shkoshim. That was much later for something else. If you have time, I'll get there.
We have all day.
3 years later.